Hello and welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. We're having a walk along the beach today because the wind is quite low, which is a nice change. So we're going to have a crack at another episode of the Interesting Time series. Part of the reason we haven't done one of these for a while is because the times are so interesting, it's like we hardly know where to begin. But we've been putting out a lot more current affairs commentary to the patrons under the title Raw Thoughts. It's the Raw Thoughts series you want to look for. Generally, we thought it was better suited to the patrons to be putting out on the on this channel. So if you want all of them, please become a patron and that'll all be there. So there's just a whole
shitstorm.
Shitstorm. I was really trying to think of the right word then. There is basically just a whole, yeah, you're right, a whole shitstorm of interesting things happening in the world at the moment. But if we're just going to just say focus on maybe our immediate surroundings as Britain for now. Johnson has effectively managed to make us the leper of the world with his Christmas cancelling announcement. So not only have many countries closed off their borders to us because they don't want the people from plague world coming and infecting their good citizens, there's also a food and supply shortage because of total chaos at the border, as France decides that they don't want the UK plague to spread to France either. I find it quite interesting that at the moment the UK media are covering this story and showing the enormous lines of lorries stuck on the motorway, and they're portraying this as a bad thing, and they're interviewing the spokespeople for UK businesses and how this is a total disaster and how it's going to really disrupt the economy in a catastrophic way if it carries on for too long and all of this. But this is where we're heading anyway, on a permanent basis. As no deal Brexit seems certain now, we passed yet another deadline. There was meant to be another deadline on Sunday again.
The ever movable deadline.
Yes, yeah. The ever extendable deadline. Oh my God, yeah. Where, again, no agreement was reached. So if we're heading towards that at the moment, I'm going to be interesting to see how the media responds. At the moment they're saying, oh, how bad it is. But are they going to change their tune, particularly the right-wing media, and say, oh yeah, it's fine really that we have this terrible chaos because it's Brexit. It's Brexit chaos. So
it's
therefore,
worth it.
It's okay. You know, it's just a little blip in the road before we launch ourselves into the magical land of World Trade Organization rules, because that'll all be fine. That's so much better than what we've got now. But the thing is, right now, they're admitting that even just disruption for a couple of days is absolutely catastrophic. But what are they going to be saying about it once we've got this on a permanent basis? It'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see, but I think permanence... The idea that whatever happens on January the 1st is going to be some kind of permanent status.
It is going to go on forever, all of this.
No, it's, you know, it's not like a permanent state of affairs. It change. It might change for the worse, I'm not saying it. But what we are sure of is it'll change, you know, within a month or two. It'll go in some direction or the other. But the idea, you know, the shock of January the 1st is then going to be like permanent and forever. That is what's going to obtain forever. It's just wrong. You know, it won't. And the idea that there's a cut-off, I mean, what to say, it's an arbitrary date. Okay, the law changes on January the 1st, you know. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you get that they negotiate at the last minute a three-month extension of the...
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either. This government is like absolute kind of the government of U-turns, they're going to call them. They may as well, instead of calling themselves the Conservatives, they should call themselves the U-turn party.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's it. Well, it sounds lovely, isn't it? Slice aside there. Yeah, they're pretty U-turny. They spin like dervishes.
Yeah.
As well.
I mean, my prediction is it won't be permanent, but what will happen is that the chaos will be so bad and the food and medicine shortages and the shortages of, well, everything, will be so, so catastrophically bad that they'll just have to go crawling to the EU to get any deal they possibly can within a couple of months into next year anyway. But the aim seems to be that we're going to be... No deal Brexit will be permanent. So that's the kind of image that they're trying to project to us anyway. But nah, I don't think that's going to happen. There is no way we can possibly survive without some sort of really good working relationship with our closest neighbours.
Well, that's
not possible.
Precisely, you know, and why would negotiations stop just because one change has taken place? It strikes me that we're never going to see the end of it.
No.
And in 15 to 20 years' time, there'll be if the EU is still there, which of course it could fucking fragment, there are a lot of sentry petrol forces within the EU. You know, it is trying to kind of blow itself asunder. You know.
Although, interestingly,
in some ways,
countries that had... also thought that maybe leaving the EU were a good idea have backed off quite dramatically happening with us.
You don't hear so much about it,
no.
But what's happening under the hood, you know. I mean, the violent swing to the right of Poland and Hungary and the potential for a rightward lurch in France and, you know, the tenor of many of the governments. I mean, just what's been happening in Greece this week. You know, in the Greek Parliament. Where you've got this authoritarian streak asserting itself. I mean, basically what happened is that the Greek Parliament removed parliamentary immunity from a member of the DM25 political party, which is called... Oh God, I can't remember it. I can't remember the name of it. It's fucking crap not being able to remember names, you know.
The Democratic...
No, I know what DM25 is, but the...
Yeah, you should tell them though, because they don't know that.
Oh, it's the Democracy in Europe movement, which is like a leftist, pan-European movement to democratically reform Europe by bringing in proper and greater democracy. But the Greek Parliament, there are 9 members of the political wing of DM25. DM25 is a social movement with a political wing. And they've got 9 members in the Greek Parliament. One of those members had the parliamentary immunity of free speech removed and is being prosecuted for criticising the police. This is in Greece.
Mm.
You know, so... And of course we've got our very own, like, fascist party in the UK. Fascist and incompetent. It's a good job they're incompetent, because if that could actually make happen, what's in their minds, we'd be really seriously fucked.
Yeah.
It's a bit like somebody said Trump was a stroke of luck. But the danger that's coming down the pike is somebody with Trump's political views and social views who's actually like crafty and intelligent. And able to make things happen and able to manipulate. You know, the fact that Trump was incompetent saved us.
Yeah, they had the brains of a snail, really.
You know, so that kind of saves us. But, you know, what's going to happen when there's an intelligent Trump
Gets
in?
was a good warning.
You know, so and these are forces in Europe. There are forces of this type in Europe, you know, ranged against them. You know, there is still a grassroots left, even though it doesn't know what it's doing, and it's having difficulty focusing itself. But those 500,000 people who joined Labour to get behind Corbyn haven't gone away. They haven't changed overnight into fucking neoliberals or fucking, you know, quasi-fascists or joined the Proud Boys or whatever. Yeah.
But they have maybe joined Corbyn's new movement that perhaps we should mention here.
Yeah, what's that called again?
Peace and Justice.
Yeah, I joined you.
Yeah, and I'm about to.
I mean, we'll just see, you know. Let's see where it goes. But all that, we've got this big broad sweep. Now, in that context, if Europe is still there, if it hasn't blown itself apart in 15 or 20 years' time, Britain, the UK will be knocking on the door. I mean, who knows? By then, Scotland might have seceded and joined the EU and gone on the Euro. Wales might have followed suit, and there's been a referendum in Ireland, and you've got a united Ireland. So you've got, like, England sitting there stewing in its fascist juice, you know.
Yeah.
Whilst in Wales, we're charging them the earth for all the water that the cities of Liverpool and Birmingham depend upon. We say, well, OK, this is Welsh water now. How much are you going to give us for it? You know. So who knows? Who knows is basically it. But big long ramble all over the place there to get to the point that we're not going to see the back of it, the issue. And your biggest trading partner, 21 miles offshore, you know.
Are we going to get everything from Japan instead, apparently? Oh yeah, that's going to happen.
I was just looking at our groceries the other day, because we eat a lot of vegetables and stuff. Spinach, product of Spain.
Yeah.
Broccoli, product of Spain. Mm-hmm. Onions, product of Spain. Leeks, product of Spain. Cabbage, product of Britain. Product of the UK or whatever you want to call the place. You know, suddenly there's tariffs on this stuff.
If it gets here at all,
yeah.
Because what's happening is, a lot of the EU lorry drivers are just saying they're not even going to try.
It's like the oilish
and get the stuff here. Well, it's not that it's going to be delayed, it's just not coming, because it's not even slightly cost effective. Yeah. Those haulage companies send a driver to be stuck in traffic jams for days on end to get produce here that could be off by the time it gets to the shops anyway.
We'll see. We'll definitely. I mean, all this is a matter of empirical matter. But my bet is on it being a bit of a shitstorm, you know.
Yeah, that's my bet too.
Because the French did a test on the on ID checks at their end. In other words, getting lorry drivers to show them their passport and then their bill of whatever it is they're carrying in their lorry.
And that took like 70 seconds.
They give them a 70 second delay each truck. And it caused a 5 mile tail back in Kent. Was it a 5 mile or a 15 mile?
About 5 miles, but he was only going for 10 hours.
Yeah.
You know, on a permanent basis or anything.
You know, and that is costing the haulage companies money, because they've got to pay the drivers. Well, just sitting in the cabin eating cereal bars.
Yeah, all the ham sandwiches they're not allowed to eat anymore. Can't take a ham sandwich, lorry driver cannot take a ham sandwich through to across the border, as it is now illegal to transport any meat that isn't frozen.
Yeah.
Well, it will be on the 1st of January.
So if that caused that much disruption, what's it going to do when they've got to do far more red tape?
Yeah.
I remember they wanted to get out of the EU because there was too much red tape.
I know.
I mean, what the fuck, you know. So, yeah, shitstorm. But of course, you know, we've got a kind of a bit of a a pre-run with this shutdown because of this strain of the virus.
Yeah, although it's not really right to call it a strain.
No, I mean, what's the guy called now?
We've been watching a video this morning by a man I've been following for quite a long time. He is the professor of virology at Columbia University.
Yeah.
And sometimes he
does... What's he called again?
It's called Vincent Bracanello.
Yeah.
And he...
He knows his shit, doesn't he?
He does.
He really does know his shit.
He's very, very experienced in what he does. In fact, the whole of his first year lectures at the university are available on YouTube.
Yeah, so
and they're brilliant.
Don't be an amateur virologist on Twitter or Facebook.
Yeah.
Saying nobody's ever seen this virus, it doesn't even really exist. Just go and find out what actually...
What viruses actually are, start there. His lectures just start right from the basics, and they're really worth listening to.
And, you know, and how thorough virology is as a science. Now, this is not to say there aren't any areas of uncertainty. That is the nature of science. It pushes the edge of the areas of uncertainty. And people say, oh, the fucking scientists changing their minds. That's the... Yes, they change their minds when they get fresh evidence. You know. So... Don't be surprised by any uncertainty at the cutting edge of science. And it's with science, it's not a question of it, like, science is true, everything else is wrong. It's a question of your best bet. And especially in these practical situations where there is a global pandemic, you know, and a disease that many people shake off quite easily, but nevertheless kills quite a few others. And which is very difficult for our healthcare systems, even in advanced countries, to cope with. So check him out and stop being an amateur virologist. They make me fucking sick, actually, you know. They just kind of dismiss this body of work, you know, which is kind of so deep and so thorough. And so open to revision in the light of new evidence. Anyway, our man...
Vincent...
says that it's the people writing the headlines about this variant, yeah, it's not a strain, because a strain is defined by being substantially different in its behaviour. It does in fact have a number, you know, it's given I forget what it is, 2020 something, something, NK, blah blah, you know, they give them these kind of codes to identify.
All variants would have their designation, I think.
Yeah.
So yes, not a strain, because it is not significantly different to what was going on before.
No.
And really, this is like a, unfortunately, kicked off by fucking Johnson. He has just kicked off a massive panic over something which was not actually a new variant, had been known for a while anyway. If you can get hold of the video that Vincent did today, and he goes through all the different data, and which really shows at the moment that it is not more infectious than what was going on before.
Yeah, well, he said the bet is that it's not. You know, the funny money is... He says, we don't know for sure yet, but you can't determine that epidemiologically.
There's no test been done, the right kind of test that you need to show that it is more infectious have not actually been done.
Yeah, you have to do it experimentally, and that's like an epistemological point. And he makes that point and the ins and outs, and he actually looks at the ways in which it's different. And gives you like a diagram of the proteins and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
There are three omissions. There's bits where a bit of the chain, the amino acid chain, is just missing. And one of them affects the kind of base of the spike. And he says that actually might make it less virulent. You know, a guess would be that if that was going to make any difference, it would just make it somewhat less virulent. Anyway, he said that he's not worried about it. And there have been loads of mutations. Viruses mutate all the time. Coronaviruses mutate at a rate... It's not the highest rate.
I think flu viruses mutate more.
Oh, yeah. But I think the type of RNA virus that it is, it does carry a repair mechanism. You know, that some organisms, I mean, the human genome, for instance, there's two copies of everything. you know, when something reproduces, when a cell reproduces, the mechanism tests to see how good the reproduction was against the master copy. I mean, eventually all this degrades and you get old, you know, and then it repairs. It uses the good copy to repair the copy that hasn't sort of quite worked. And most viruses don't have that. The ones that mutate quickly don't have that. And for obvious reasons, any sort of change in the RNA or the DNA, if it's a DNA virus, isn't repaired and therefore is able to keep reproducing, you know, as a new variant. It goes into all that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, don't be an armchair virologist. Go and check this shit out.
Yeah. To be fair, to understand what he was saying, I had to kind of did to watch quite a lot of his things and listen to quite a lot of his lectures. So, but this particular one, there is virology terminology in there which most people aren't going to understand, but he's still clear enough to really get the gist of what you're saying.
Well, the gist is that headline writers are armchair virologists and they don't know what they're talking about.
But though, I am actually glad that Johnson was panicked enough by this, even if it wasn't really quite right, to cancel Christmas, because basically it was going to be massive nationwide super spreader event that was going to kill thousands of people.
Yeah.
And it was going to be absolutely devastating. So whatever reason, he was finally persuaded to cancel things. I'm glad he did. Although it's kind of set off this literal worldwide panic now where nobody wants to touch us with a barge pole.
And we're gonna
heard this morning they wanted to test everyone coming over the border into France, all the lorry drivers and everything. Yeah. I mean, imagine how much that's going to slow everything down.
Yeah. They will do it, though.
Yeah.
It's going to slow stuff down, but it wouldn't, apart from that, be a bad thing, would it? You know, so...
Well, I mean, we're absolutely dependent on, you know, free-flowing freight between us and the EU for our food supply, so it's going to be really shocking.
A thing that has been exaggerated there is obviously it's what they call accompanied freight. That means there's a driver in a lorry, bringing it. Mm. But 80% of freight coming into the UK is unaccompanied. In other words, it goes in a container, on a ferry, craned on, craned off, you know. There's not like a human person accompanying it, basically. And that is the majority of the freight. Now, I don't know if this applies to stuff like lettuce from Spain.
Yeah.
Tesco's and Sainsbury's are saying they're well stocked up. But the perishables, you know, he said, if they don't sort it out today, and it was only a 48-hour exclusion by the France. It wasn't like, that's it, you lot, fuck off forever. It's 48 hours.
Also, I think it was quite good for the your average Brexiteer on the street to see how if France decides that they don't really like what we're doing very much for some reason, maybe some fish-related reason, it's what they could do and how much trouble they could actually cause, like, really easily. The only reason fishing is being used as political football here by Johnson and Co. is not because fishing contributes in massively to the UK economy. I think it's like, I don't know, 0.01% or something. It's absolutely minuscule.
Yeah, and most of it's owned by bloody oligarchs.
Yeah, anyway, so, you know, the little kind of homegrown fishermen in the fishing towns and things, I mean, they're buggered anyway now. Through Brexit,
I can't imagine that
most of their catch is sold in the EU.
Yeah.
So
they can't sell it now. If you can have like a 40% tariff on it.
Yeah. So no deal's going to absolutely shaft them anyway. But it's being used as this obstruction thing, just to kind of get a no deal across the line. Really, you know, the Tories don't give a shit about fishing. But it looks great on the papers. Launch the warships.
Yeah.
We will control our waters.
Yeah,
it's all the kind of gamins lap up that stuff.
Yeah, and you know, and perfidious France, you know.
Yeah.
The perfidy of France, cutting off our food supplies. You know, it's like it applies right into the fucking xenophobia, doesn't it? If you were a conspiracy theorist, you'd think, well, that's handy, innit? That can have a fucking go at the French, you know. That can stir up the gamin base, the xenophobic base, with anti-French fucking sentiments. Which, of course, the gutter press have been doing for the past, well, all of my life.
500 years?
Yeah. Certainly since the UK went in the EU in 73. Remember, they tried to get in before then, but General de Gaulle, who was the then president, I think, of France, said no, you know. Said, we're not having them, the motherfuckers, basically. So at that time, the xenophobes actually thought, well, who's he to keep us out, you know. Remember, you know, the British Isles, or Britain, because Britain hasn't always been the United Kingdom, has it? Has been warring with the French. Well, 1066, isn't it? You know, in fact, they were actually basically Vikings who settled in Normandy. That's what it means, Norman, Norsemen. You know, and became Frankified. So they spoke French instead of Norse. But they're basically like Normans. Then they come over with William the Conk, took over. French was a language across much of England, certainly. You know, with the natives relegated to a position a bit like the Welsh speakers here, you know, speaking their Anglo-Saxon. Eventually the two languages hybridise into English, you know. It's a fucking patois, mongrel language. Mixture of Norman French and Anglo-Saxon, with some chunks of Latin, Greek, and a few bits of borrowed stuff from India and places, you know. And they've been fighting ever since, and marrying French princesses and this, that, and the other, and Agincourt, and Napoleon, for fuck's sake, Napoleon, you know. And then fighting the French in America over who's going to grab America. That's why you got French Canada now, you know. And even like French still spoken in Louisiana, which was a French colony. So there's a like, long history of war. And it's still kind of, there's enough there to plug into it, even though people go on their holidays in France and they learn French in school, you know. So this whole thing plays into the fucking xenophobia. If you're a conspiracy theorist, you'd think they've done this on purpose. Because here's like one of the most prominent virologists saying that the headline writers have been irresponsible about this and showing you like the structure of the proteins, explaining very carefully to you how it all works, and saying, well, it's, you know, and until we've got like experimental evidence, we shouldn't be jumping to conclusions about this thing. And he said he's not that worried, you know, any more than he's worried about the whole kind of pandemic in general.
Yeah. Although...
And he's not a rogue scientist.
If many of the people who've been really treating this very lightly and going around and infecting people are now... have a good dose of terror, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, you sort of have a hope that I don't sort of like 100% share that when the shit hits the fan on January the 1st, that some of these Brexiteers are going to wake up. But
I'm sure some of them will.
I think some will, and some already have. You can find people on Twitter saying, I voted to leave, but I was misguided because I wasn't told the truth. And now that is very big of them to do that. And that is the you know, the proper answer to it, because they were not told the truth.
No.
You know, all the stuff on the side of the bus.
Oh, God, yeah.
And we keep sure. Letting politicians and Farage saying, oh, we'll have Norway plus. Now he's the most hardline no dealer possible. It's like we've not even got to speak to the fucking Europeans ever again, you know.
Yeah.
As though there they are sitting 21 miles across the water, supplying us with a good chunk of our food. Yeah.
And we're just going to spit on them now.
You mean you're not even going to speak to them? Come on. And what they don't realise is that any treaty between nations involves ceding some sovereignty. You know, to the letter of the treaty and the legal force of the treaty. That becomes an area where you don't break the law. And, you know, the international order, as fraught and, I don't know, unsatisfactory as it is nevertheless held together to everybody's advantage by treaties and these little cedings of sovereignty. It's even the WTO is a ceding of sovereignty. The WTO has a court to settle disputes. You know, how else would you settle a dispute between trading nations because one thinks the other's broke the rules? You have to have some kind of a court. Even though Trump tried to destroy it. Well, I don't think it's got a full complement of members. Whether that's been put right or not.
I looked at that recently and no, they don't.
And this is down to Trump largely. Because he wants to kind of destroy the international order as it is and reconfigure it. With an isolationist America, nevertheless using its, throwing its weight around in a fairly anarchic situation. But even the WTO, and those people say to them, well, why don't you push for leaving NATO? Because that's a massive ceding of sovereignty. In a military alliance, you know, pretty well most of Western Europe, and Turkey, and the United States and Canada. Why don't you secede from that? Because that basically is a military alliance under the leadership of America. And if it ever had to activate itself, it would be an American general sitting at the head of it. They say nothing about that because they like that, because it's military, because it's violence. I'm not completely convinced by the ability of people to learn. And I know it's not very charitable, and I'm supposed to be for the working class and all the rest of it. But they really have an amazing capacity to double down on the most stupid fucking ideas and the most stupid positions. The whole log, including the postage. Yeah.
I think it's easy to double down on something when the direct consequences of the thing that you believe are not kind of smashing you right in the face repeatedly day after day.
Yeah.
I think if it really goes to the wire, and there is hardly any food and there are riots and all the things in Yellowhammer come to pass, and it's right in their face, because when it's just an idea, it's very, very easy to make a whole load of shit up around this idea. But when it's actually real, it's different.
Yeah, it is different, and some people will see sense, but you'll be surprised at the number that don't, and they'll make up an excuse. Now blame the EU. That means Johnson's.
Blaming the EU isn't actually going to put food on the shelves, is that?
But they won't blame the stupidity of their own fucking voting for it. They'll blame the EU. They'll say Brexit's still a good idea, but look what the EU's doing to us.
Right, and then they'll have to admit then that all the stuff they were saying about Britain holding all the cards and being, you know, a strong and mighty empire that they still believe it to be, and the EU will do anything we say because we're so amazing. But if we're saying, oh, the EU's being mean to us, being mean, and not letting us have the food that we want, they would have to admit that we are not the big, powerful, macho bully boy who will get everything we want. And actually, the EU is far more powerful than we
are. In these situations,
they're going to have to change their ideas, come what may.
Well, this is where I think they don't have to change their ideas. You're kind of working on the premise that they're fucking rational. Remember, we've got all these people storming around London every Saturday and scrapping.
Some people are rational, you know. There's a few of them.
But gammons aren't. Brexiteers aren't.
No.
It was irrational from the start.
But as long as there's enough rational people, maybe we'll survive.
Oh, yeah. There's probably just about enough rational people for us to survive. But don't expect there to be a getting of wisdom when the shit hits the fan en masse. I'd put money on it.
Yeah.
That is the infuriating thing. Otherwise, we could just make the good arguments. Then the world would have been this kind of peaceful, unified space without xenophobia, without hatred, with freedom of movement, with equality and widespread prosperity. Of course, all the reason says, let's work for that with all our amazing skills. What do? We fight each other.
Well, let's just explore that then.
We fight each other over nothing.
Let's just explore that and see where that would go. Okay, comes to the crunch time. This is bad as predicted. They double down. It's the EU's fault. We hate them. The xenophobia gets worse. where is it going? Like, what are the consequences of that going to be?
Well, fascism.
And how are the consequences of that then going to affect what they believe and what their actions are?
Well, it's like I say, it's fascism, and therefore it's at some level the weaponisation of the death instinct. What does that mean in practice? It means that you're like Hitler in the bunker. Hitler was still you know, telling the troops to kind of try harder in Russia and stuff. And
put the gun in his mouth.
It's only at the end, and it's like you'll go all the way, you'll go off the cliff. You know, it's the weaponisation of the death instinct. Is because you'll go the whole hog, right the way until suicide. Until, you know, the only way to continue denying the real situation is to kill yourself.
Death or glory.
Death or glory, whatever. But fascism works on that. It mobilises that jouissance, you know, that ecstasy of destruction. And self-destruction, if necessary, in pursuit of a cause.
Okay, but seeing as we can't divert all the kind of like the rage and the lust for, I don't know, whatever it was they were lusting for, into war and violence, because our lot couldn't organise a war, bloody hell. They can't even order like surgical gloves from like Turkey with any competence, for God's sake.
I know.
So that's not going to happen, I don't think.
But they'll go off the cliff.
But how? Let's just in practical terms, like what is going to be our bunker moment? Let's say the population rides this all the way to the bunker moment, as we call it. What in our society in the UK right now? How would you think that would manifest? Because starving people are not going to be standing in the street waving flags. Are they?
I kind of beg to differ. But we'll see. I mean, you know, we can speculate endlessly about which way it'll go. And the only proof we've got is the empirical unfolding itself. Ultimately, we'll see. But if I was a betting man, I'd be putting money on Brexiteers and gammons facing a pretty catastrophic or a very uncomfortable and dark period as a direct result of Brexit, and they'll continue to be in denial.
But you won't see
them on Twitter or on Facebook saying, I was wrong.
Yeah,
few are doing that now.
Maybe.
But there's a hardcore.
What we haven't put into the equation here is the right-wing press. Now, if the right-wing press get what they want out of Brexit, which is basically the billionaire owners of the right-wing press have basically betted the farm on the pound crashing after no-deal Brexit. Yeah. Now, let's say that we've got over that hurdle. They're now richer than God. They don't need to kind of roll with the kind of no-Brexit glory story anymore. And they think that we've gone in there, we've bought up loads of businesses cheap, the whole disaster capitalism is good, let's build up Britain again. So now we need to change the story and tell the Brexiteers that actually, maybe Brexit wasn't so good. Let's build back the country and unite with our friends in Europe again. I don't know.
They won't do that. They'll tell them a story. They won't do that. They'll.
I didn't think they'd do that. That's just like being a bit silly, really. They're going to change the story.
They'll start selling the Singapore on Sea thing, you know, Singapore on Thames.
How are they going to sell that to the public, though? Because basically, it's like, you know, we're going to create slave labour for their readership.
Well, they've managed.
They're going to sell that to their readership. Yeah. Oh, it's going to be great to be slaves to the new elite.
This is the horror of the situation, is that they successfully sell the most implausible, the most irrational, the most destructive ideas to the public, and the public buy them. Jeremy Corbyn told them the truth. The way forward is for the many, not the few.
Yeah.
Here's what we need to do it. And they chucked him out, like with a vengeance. Come on. And they bought get Brexit done. You know, nonsensical phrase. And of course, Brexit will never be done.
No.
Certainly, in that sense of a completely, you know, Robinson Crusoe nation, a completely isolated hermit nation. It's not a possibility, certainly not for a country like this. And you've got 60 plus million people clinging to a fucking rock in a cold sea. Unable to produce food supplies for the entire population. Come on. Now, I mean, the thing that intrigues me is the capacity of people to double down on idiot ideas. And I think you can underestimate it. I think Marx underestimated it, which is why we had to have Freudian Marxism. It's why we had to elaborate the concept of ideology, which basically tells you mentally what is happening in the situation in which slaves acquiesce to their slavery. And without understanding mechanisms there and processes, you're not ever going to be able to find the way of undoing it. I mean, in the name of the love of humanity, it has to be undone. But I don't believe that because we can have a disaster and people en masse will see into it. Some will, some certainly will, but many won't. You know, and there'll be a force. Like doubling down is a force. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not to say it's the force that will necessarily win. One hopes fervently not. But don't underestimate it is what I want to say about this. Even though we will see. We have this sort of slight difference in our evaluation of how we think it might pan out. I mean, I actually think that Johnson's lot and the EU will put in some measures to kind of soften the impact of it all. You know, it's still going to be fucking horrible. The economy is going to contract 10% or something, which it can't afford to do at this time. And there'll be a lot of horrible propaganda fallout, you know. Like, we're going to blame the French like fuck now.
I wonder how the French feel about that.
Well, they'll say fuck them, you know, perfidious Albion, you know. Did Napoleon say that? Perfidious Albion, you know. And you know, the roast beefs are a bunch of fucking red-faced, fucking beer-drinking arseholes, you know. Uncivilised barbarians.
Yeah.
And we call them like cheese-eating surrender monkeys or that mess. That's what Bush called them, isn't it? Because they wouldn't join in with Iraq, and all power to them.
Yeah.
UK shouldn't have joined in with Iraq. Anyway, mate, you're living interesting times.
Yeah. Although I definitely could have done with things being quite a lot less interesting.
Well, me too.
I think things, God, I mean, I honestly, I know we talk about this all the time. If you were a fly on the wall in our house, it's just kind of like non-stop discussion of interesting times. But, you know, just trying to think about what could possibly happen next year. It's impossible to tell, really. Things are changing so fast.
Yeah. I mean, there are people trying to find the answer, if you might put it as crudely as that. You know, let's say the DiEM25 that we mentioned, a pan-European social movement for a Green New Deal, revision of the system, post-capitalist building, with a political wing to get members in the European Parliament and in national parliaments. But, you know, imagine this, pan-European as well. Mm. I mean,
is that just the first of its kind?
I think there have been movements like this probably forever. You know, it's a bit like, you know, the international and all this kind of stuff. But it's unique to know. It's Yanis Varoufakis is one of the founders, but he's got a good group of people around him. Smart people, economists, philosophers, politicians. But they're trying to make it a grassroots movement as well. And then Jeremy Corbyn's thing. We'll see where that goes.
Yeah. You listened to his interview, didn't you, about what that was all about. I haven't listened to it yet. What did he say?
Carrie-Anne Mendoza. He was just talking.
From the Canary, wasn't it?
Yeah. He was just talking about his kind of how he got to be where he is and what his values are and stuff.
Did he describe like how this movement was going to work? Or
didn't say too much about that, but I mean, as I say, basically, if you sign up for the newsletter, you're in.
Right.
You can give money or not, depending on whether you want to or not. But it's a form like a grassroots movement, presumably to do some political lobbying within the Labour Party, but also to take up issues at grassroots level around the obvious stuff, you know, climate justice, for the many, not the few, basically. Just that basic idea that there's too much of a concentration of wealth and power in the hands of very few people globally, as a result of a system designed to trickle wealth up into the hands of very few, but bearing in mind that wealth is power. And there's a counter-movement to that at all kind of levels, you know, because it manifests in all kinds of ways, in systemic racism, in police violence, in unfair labour practices, exploitation of workers, and so on. So it strikes me as a very good move. And I haven't heard Keir Starmer say anything about it.
I've been really quite interested that he doesn't seem to be trying to stop it, because he wants to stop Corbyn at every turn.
It's simply carrying on purging the left.
Yeah.
They purged the guy who formed an alliance between gay liberation people and the miners in the miners' strike in the middle of the 1980s. What an unholy alliance, these kind of like burly South Wales miners, you know, and then these kind of gay people from the metropolises, you know, from London and so forth, coming and marching with them and expressing solidarity with them, and that forming an amazing movement.
That must have taken some doing.
Absolutely.
A lot of skill.
Somebody made a film of it.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it's called, but it's really one of those good British political films, you know.
Yeah.
It's lovely. It's a lovely film.
Do you remember what it's called?
I can't, off the top of my head. It's out there. It's either on Amazon or on Netflix or Channel 4 or something. You can get it. I don't remember the title. But it's very moving.
So did Carl Starmer get rid of the guy who organised it?
Well, he's now a secretary of a PLP. Or the assistant secretary or something. And he said something, he supported somebody or something. And suspended him. I mean, just like a hero of the fucking Labour movement and, you know, and of social justice movements. Suspended. You know, and it's... well, of course, in our own CLP we had it, because I was at a meeting, a Zoom meeting, in which I kind of got the lawyer of the land and... Because our CLP sent a letter to Labour HQ saying we supported Jeremy Corbyn, he shouldn't be suspended, bring him back. And they then suspended the secretary. It's a kind of a partial suspension. I think that came from Welsh Labour. which is a bit, it is a bit different from you know, the Labour HQ in Westminster or in London. But our secretary, who is, you know, just somebody who works really, really, really hard, you know, puts a lot of time and voluntary effort into trying to work for a movement to support ordinary people and look after their interests, gets suspended for just actually wanting to discuss something, you know? And we were told there's some things we can't discuss here. There's a directive from that David, what's he called? I was looking at David Evans, the new sort of General Secretary. I mean, he's not even elected, it's a paid post, you know. He's like a party civil servant, you know.
Yeah.
Telling us the stuff we can't talk about. So, of course, we terminate the meeting. The guy who's lent us his Zoom account says, I've got to go now and do something. But if you want to stay here and have an informal meeting after, because obviously informally, how can they say? How can the Labour Party say that you and I can't discuss?
Yeah.
You know, anti-Semitism has been weaponised, or any of these things you're not supposed to say. We can say what the fuck we like to each other. Mm. You know. So all that's happening, that doesn't bode well. And then Jeremy Corbyn creates this initiative. And I don't know how true this is, but somebody said that 500,000 people had joined within the first few hours. I think that's probably unlikely. But I think it will be a big movement. I mean, I suppose a lot depends on if he gets a good people around him and if he kind of keeps his vitality. Bear in mind the guy's over 70.
Yeah. And he's had an awful lot of heartbreak to deal with just over the last year, hasn't he?
God, he's as tough as old boots. Tough as old boots.
Yeah. But, you know, all power to him to come out and do this. That's really impressive, considering what has happened to him. So, yeah, maybe that kind of gives me a little bit of hope that the left is still alive and kicking.
Well, what I'm trying to say is, I'm saying all this kind of bleak stuff about, you know, shifting the inertia of the ideological common sense in inverted commas, which basically says there is no alternative to capitalism, capitalist realism. Mark Fisher. I mean, he killed himself with the despair from that.
Yeah.
Well, why he killed himself exactly, obviously, nobody knows, but he said that, you know, it's so deeply entrenched, that idea, that there is no alternative. Tina, Mrs. Thatcher, said it, you know, Tina, he's abbreviated to Tina. But there's no way out. That it's going to take mighty effort and a lot of ingenuity, I think. But there's also a lot of positive stuff. I mentioned Chile the other day in the podcast, you know, getting the new constitution, or at least setting things up to there's lots of stuff happening, lots of initiatives. Hello, kids. Hello. There's a lot of stuff happening as well. The strike in India, 250 million people.
Yeah, isn't that the biggest strike ever?
Yeah, world history, probably. I know people come out with these little, you know, markers, but yeah.
Yeah, pretty amazing.
It's got to be up there.
And again, they must have some great people organising all of that to make it happen.
Yeah. And yet Modi had a fucking landslide, didn't he?
I don't know if he will next time. Unless he's completely rid the election, which is quite likely.
Well, I wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah.
Even though Biden's got, like, he don't have a great track record, he's appointed some dodgy people. He's appointed some interesting people as well. And he will get straight back into the Paris Accord and all these things that really had to be done, you know? Yeah. Trump was dangerous for that. And for the way he was reneging or not preparing to renew nuclear arms treaties with Russia and with other countries in the world which have either got nuclear weapons or about to get them. That was very dangerous as well. you know, winding down the EPA, which he did, actually winding down, like, you know, global pandemical readiness, which is something else that he did, all in the name of a kind of American nationalism, exceptionalism, isolationism. So it's a good job he's gone. And I think there was a lot of the confidence of the Erdogans and the Orbans and the Bolsonaros of this world drew a lot of confidence from the fact that they got one of their own ilk in the White House, you know, the seat of global power. So that's something. It's a crack. Biden's not great, but there's a crack there.
Yeah. I think Trump losing the election is probably one of the best things that happened this year.
Yeah, that's
right. There's been so very, very few good things.
Even though he's got his stooges calling for martial law.
Yeah.
So declare martial law and get the army to oversee a rerun of the election.
Yeah.
Some people take that quite seriously, and they're kind of fairly serious people who said it. Was it a general who got arrested and locked up for some nefarious goings on, and then pardoned by Trump? So they don't have a high degree of credibility. I've spoken to some American friends about that. Some are quite worried by it, and others are saying, well, nobody credible has said this, it's not going to happen.
I suppose the clock is ticking down, isn't it?
Where, yeah,
soon he's just not going to have the power to do that.
No. I mean, the other thing in American politics is the big spat between people who think that the squad have compromised over, you know, Medicare for All.
The Democratic squad.
Yeah. And they've actually, now that they're in there, as a minority in a pretty right-wing Senate and House and government, that they're kind of like capitulating, rather like Angela Rayner seems to have done in the Starmer. You know, she said, oh, we'll expel thousands of members if we have to. She's just swung quickly to the right, you know, behind Starmer, in exchange for a position on the front bench as deputy leader. But she's a kind of a, you know, it's like brown faces in high places, which is like, you know, working class accents in high places.
Yeah.
It doesn't an egalitarian party make.
Yeah.
You know, so very disappointing. And if it's true about AOC and her mates, that would be disappointing too. But the sort of the left and the leftish tendencies in the American commentariat, they're kind of pretty well split, you know, between like Jimmy Dore's camp and then the Young Turks camp, with the Grey Zone, which is Aaron Mattei and Ben Norton and Max Blumenthal, thinking that the squad have sold out. So there's like, you know, very convenient for the right, huge nasty squabble on the left.
Yeah.
Same as here, you know.
Yeah.
Because you try and have a party that tries to marry incompatibles, basically, if I'm right to say. You only like the Labour Party, you know, where it's got a neoliberal wing, even though neoliberalism is massively discredited. But basically, you know, we'll do capitalism better wing, over and against the kind of democratic socialist wing that says, well, we will, through democracy, change the system. Even though they're a bit faint-hearted, a lot of them, you know, we'll just change it a little bit just to make it better, but at least some understanding that it's the system itself that's fucking everybody over.
Anyway, so yeah, a bit of a ramble there. As I said, there's just so much going on. It's like I said, it's difficult to know where to land. And also, everything's just also so uncertain and changing so fast. Sometimes we do a podcast and it's out of date the next day. Like, there's been a big U-turn or another event has just, you know, just wiped out, and sometimes we don't even put them out. So, lots of bits and pieces in there. So I hope everyone found that interesting. and we will speak to you soon.
Make knowledge great again.